This is Mireya Loza. It is the 24th of September, 2008. I am in Heath, Arkansas, interviewing Vance Beasley for the Bracero History Project. Mr. Beasley, when were you born?
I was born in Heber Springs, Arkansas, in 1916. 3/11/16.
What was Heber Springs like when you were little?
Well, it's a mountainous country. It's about 120 miles west of here, a little more. And we were farmers. We lived out in about 6 miles from Heber Springs, and transportation was wagon and team at the time, and roads were just dirt roads mostly, but they were kept in shape to go and come with a wagon. And my first school was a one-room school. We walked to school. And later, they built a new school building. This first school was named Bean Special, I believe. Had one teacher, all grades. And then they consolidated and built another school, a bigger school, and it was 2.5 miles from where we were, and we still walked. Yeah. And it was called Valley Special, and we walked to that. And I guess I was in the fifth or sixth grade when we moved from there. We moved from Heber Springs to over here in 1927. And in January.
Did you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
There was, altogether there were seven of us, five boys and two girls.
Were you the oldest?
I was the third. And there are two of us left, me and my sister, one sister. That's what's left. Immediately, well, shortly after we moved here, the 27 flood happened. And it covered all this country up in water about 5 feet deep from the Mississippi River. And so we had to get out of here and went to Crowley's Ridge. Now you're familiar with Crowley's Ridge, I guess. It's about 18 miles over this to the west of here. And we stayed out there about 6 weeks and came back. And I attended the public schools here. They had school buses here at the time. And then we farmed in the summertime. Usually we had to quit early And the year to help put the crop in, and we started late in the fall after we got the crop out. And
I went to
Hughes School. I graduated from Hughes in 1935. And Bernadine graduated from Hulbert, which was the high school for West Memphis at the time, in 1935. And we both went to the University of Arkansas that fall. She in the School of Business and me in agriculture. And we graduated from the university in 1939. I believe it was. And jobs were scarce at the time. And we had become engaged to be married when I could get a job. And it was in the fall before that happened. And a lot of the boys didn't get jobs. And so, there were some tough times back then. There was a big depression, like none other. And FDR got elected, and he put new hope into people, and we came out of it. And so I taught vocational agriculture for 17 years, and Bernadine taught. She taught commercial work, typing and shorthand and bookkeeping. And then she got a master's degree in English and taught English. And she taught longer than I did. But we made it. We had three children, two daughters and a son. And his youngest was born in 48. So he's now 60 years old, and the other two are a little past 65 and 67 maybe. So, and they live, the daughters live near here. One daughter was a teacher, and she taught in the Jonesboro school in the vocational department there in the high school. And she retired from that once she had put her time in, and she lives right down the road here, and the other one too, right down the road here. And well, I was teaching, and doing all right, and had three children, and my father decided that he wanted me to come and help him farm. A younger brother had already come into the farming with him, and he gave me a chance to come in, and so we moved back here from over in western Arkansas at a school, and I went to farming, and she went to teaching at Hughes. And father was still he still had That's a mule, but he was getting out of it and going to tractors at the time. So he said, I need some young help. I was 40 years old. But I was able-bodied and stout and knew how to work and went after it. So we formed a partnership, the two brothers and their dad, and he lived 10 years after I came back. He died in 67, I think it was. 11 years after I came back. At age 79. And my brother and I continued to farm as a partnership. And we did pretty well. He got killed accidentally in a tractor accident in 1994. So Bernie then and I formed a partnership. We called it C.J. Beasley and Sons. C.J. was our daddy, and we kept that name and still have it today. But we quit farming at the end of 04. And rented out. We have close to 1,000 acres that we own of land that we rent. And I'm 92 and she is 91. And we're still able to go. Now, when I came back here, there was the cotton was the main crop. And they were beginning, they had been using Mexican labor in the fall to help pick the cotton. And because of the things, the way things had gone, a lot of the people had moved to Chicago and other towns in the north who opened their doors to them and welcomed them. And they could get a job and on the farm. It got to where it was too costly to chop the cotton, and we just had to do it some other way. And so they left. And we didn't have the help we needed to pick the crop. And we hadn't gone to mechanical pickers at the time. So my father would contract for a group of Mexican men in the fall, 35 to 40 of them, for the season. I don't know how long that was exactly, maybe 2 months, 2.5 months, something like that. And they would come, and I think the same bunch came back every time to here. And they really saved the day. They came to work, and And they did work, and they picked the cotton clean, and they picked the rows clean of cotton. You were picking the cotton? No, you didn't.
I haven't.
Yeah. That doesn't hurt you any.
Why, how did your father get the Mexicans?
Well, that was a government program. And they had a representative in the county to contract with, and so that was a common thing back then, and it worked all right. They came when they were supposed to, and then when the time was up, if they needed an extension, they could get it. But if the weather was bad and they couldn't pick, they went on back to Mexico. No trouble. And they were paid the going wage. They had a leader in the bunch who could speak English, and he tended to the weights. He weighed his cotton. We furnished the trailers to put them in, cotton trailers, and hauled it to the gin, and paid him the money, and he paid his help, paid the fellas. We and they made them some money to take home. It didn't cause any trouble, whatever. And we had certain requirements to meet to get them, and which was furnish a house and water, and I don't believe there were any lights if they were available, and a couple of tables and something to cook with, and cots to sleep on and pads, and so the house had to be screened and so forth, and they made it. We did that. We had the cots and the pads, and of course it was warm weather, and they didn't mostly. And we bought our first mechanical picker in 1960, and we picked 58 bales with it that year. We had to hold out of the crop until they picked what they were going to pick and left, and then I scrapped up 58 bales around with it. And but they were really satisfactory, and they saved the day. But of course, everything went to mechanical pickers, you know, pretty quick. And but those folks, we had some pickers out of Memphis. They were colored folks, and they weren't satisfactory.
Why?
Why? Mm-hmm. All right. When you in a field, you pick the row from one end to the other, and some of the rows may not be quite as good as others, see? But the practice was to pick your roll, and if you had to weigh before you got it out, come back to that roll and pick it on out. And not be grasshoppering around over here and getting into better cotton. No matter what row you got, you know, and that's what we had with them. They wouldn't pick their rows out. They didn't pick it clean. They had a lot of beer drinking in the bunch, and they had a big time and all. So I paid a bunch off about in the morning. I said, y'all just haven't done right here. Just left this field, and the thing is, if you pick this field and go to another one, it may be better, it may not be any better, but the thing is, we got to pick a whole field. So I said, well, rather than just have a big squabble here, I'll just pay you all and let you go.
Why do you think that they didn't clean it really well?
Well, there's a difference in the work ethic of people. I have a son who lives in Dallas, Texas, and he is in the commercial construction. And they get Mexican labor all together. They don't have any blacks. And they come to work, and they don't feel like that they're owed a whole lot. You know, they feel like they're privileged to come to work. And regardless of what's gone before in this country, a lot of these blacks don't care whether they work or not. They want to get by us. As they can, or let somebody else keep them up, you know, welfare or something like that. And so there's a difference. And having been through a depression myself, and having to work and make it, I can relate to people that have had it pretty tough coming up, you know. And many of those folks in Mexico, they could make a whole lot more here than they could there. They didn't have anything to do hardly, no. But they knew how to work, and that's what they came for. There was no... And I guess some people feel like stoop labor, as it's called, is beneath them. You know, or a hole is beneath them. I don't. My take is, whatever it takes, do it. And I'm not too good to do it.
Did your farm ever hire Mexicans from Texas, or Jamaicans, or other folks other than the blacks from Memphis?
Well, there were restrictions on the Mexican folks, and we had to take them and, you know, had to contract for them in advance and take them when the time came. And uh, that wasn't the way it was with these hall hands out of Memphis and other places. And so I don't mean to disparage the black folks, but there's a great difference in them. We need our black folks too. We need our white folks. And if it wasn't for the Mexicans, we wouldn't have the vegetables and so forth that we have. That they're imported in California, you know, still, and other places. But we were real pleased with what we had, with that program.
Did people hear things about the Mexicans? Were they prepared to receive the Mexicans before they ever came in? Did they say things about the Mexicans in the news or on the radio to prepare the locals to take them?
Oh, I don't know about that. It was a government program, and there were plenty of Mexicans needed to come to work, and so we just had to apply for them and contract to get the deal made to get them. And there was a representative in Forest City that tended to that, and we fixed a place for them to live, and they had a leader, and they had some kind of a bus or something like that to come in, see, and we provided some tubs and wash pots and stuff like that so they could clean up. And then it was rough living, but it was living. And they were used to that. So.
Did they work all week, did they work the entire week, or did they have a day off?
Oh, they would work every day, and we let them tend to that. This leader could speak English, and he tended to this crew, and that's the way it usually was. They had someone in the group that was a leader, and he was responsible for them, and we just paid him directly for the picking, and it was very satisfactory. We couldn't talk, you know. They didn't. Any of them already talk any English.
How did you teach them how to pick cotton? Did they know how to pick cotton, or did you teach them?
Oh my God, they knew how to pick cotton. Yes, they did. They knew how to pick cotton. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they grow a lot of cotton in Mexico. They were used to that.
And
well, I say, cotton is grown in Mexico. And no matter about that, it doesn't take you long to learn how to grab that stuff and put it in a sack, see?
But how did they learn how to pick it so clean?
Oh, well. Picking it instead of just grabbing it and pulling it off with your hands, you know. There'd be some, be a few leaves, dead leaves. The cotton, at first, they can pick. If it's hand picking, we did not defoliate the cotton for hand picking, and the cotton would be opened up pretty good and still have green leaves. Well, with a cotton picker, you want to get those green leaves off there because it's going to get everything, all of them in there in the cotton if you don't. And but we may not have defoliated the cotton at all for hand picking, but with a machine we had to. Sometimes the defoliant worked. You got a good drop, but you'd still get some leaves in it that hang into the cotton. And then, if it rained a good bit, take a second growth. The cotton would take a second growth and leaf out again, see? We quit growing cotton in 1978, my brother and I. It got to a place where we just couldn't make it, couldn't make a yield. It didn't have the right kind of herbicides to control the weeds in it, and we couldn't afford to chop it. We just quit. And didn't make the kind of yield it takes. Today, it's altogether different. And they've got better varieties, and they mature earlier. And make a good yield. It's unusual if they make under 2 bales to the acre, and many times 3 is what they make, and that's a crop. We couldn't make that kind of crop.
When the Mexicans were here, you were telling me that they lived, you fixed up a place for them. What did they eat?
Well, I don't know exactly what they did eat. They ate a lot of flour made bread, and maybe I just don't know. They tended to that.
Who took them to the grocery store? Who took them to the grocery store? Did they go to the grocery store?
Well, I think their leader, he did that. He took care of their grocery business, and they did their cooking and whatever it was, and if they had meat, whatever it was. So I don't know anything about that.
Did they ever go into the town?
Not very much. not too much. That I know of.
I was in there when they bought groceries sometimes.
They were there.
You were there when they bought groceries sometimes?
Yeah.
For the recording, let me say, that is the voice of Bernadine.
They looked at what was available, and then they, if they had a preference, they told the leader, and he bought it. they wanted by just conferring with each other and the leader.
Oh, that's interesting.
Pointing with a finger, did you say?
No, I didn't say that, but by discussing among themselves, they could determine what they wanted.
When they were here working, did you ever have to give them tools or hats or things that they needed to work?
What?
When they were here working, did they ever need tools or gloves or hats? Or did they just work without anything?
Well, they had a... Most of them had a straw hat. Mm-hmm. And I think they wore overalls. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about that. Don't remember. But they wore a shirt and pants, if not. And, of course, they wore a shirt and a straw hat and shoes. And we furnished the sacks for them. Cotton pick sacks. You ever see a pick sack?
No, but I heard about them.
Oh, well, it's sack that you put the loop over your shoulder and it fits up under your arm, the back side of the bottom side, and then the top side is open where you can put the cotton in it. And they are about 7 feet long, and you might put 100 pounds of cotton in it. That's a pretty good sack of cotton if you get 100 pounds in it. Might be less than that. The cotton trailer is parked as nearby to where they be needing the way as possible. And that cotton trailer was a two-bale trailer. Four-wheel trailer. It was, instead of having cotton pins, we got away from the cotton pins and used trailers. To put the cotton in and then haul directly the gin there, instead of having to dig it out of the cotton pin and put in something to haul.
What did the black folks that were working on the farm, the black folks from Memphis, what did they think about the braceros? Were they angry that the braceros were
well,
here?
I don't know exactly what to tell you about that, but if they had anything to say about it, I don't know it. You may wonder if they thought that the Mexicans were taking their jobs, and is that the question?
Did they think somewhat.
Well, that's speculative. I don't know about that. They picked a good bit of cotton for us, but it wasn't as satisfactory as the Mexicans was. And so that was the history of it. And whatever they may have thought, when you contract with a group, you know you're contracted to provide cotton for them to pick when they come. And if the people are not out here living on a place, and it used to be that we had enough people on the place to work the cotton and pick it. And then it got to where they had more cotton than they could handle and went on like that. And so it's an economic thing, of course. And a lot of people left to get on welfare, believe it or not. And had many single mothers with a family, they could go to the north and get on welfare and live and not have to do anything. Well, an end came to that, too.
Did you ever have any problems with any of the Mexican workers? Did any ever get sick or?
We didn't have any problems that I know of. And if there were any problems among them, their leader took care of it. And he could talk to them, you see. And we welcomed them here. They knew they were welcome. And they behaved themselves and didn't go in trouble.
When they went into town, did all of the businesses provide them service? Or were some businesses restricted that they couldn't go in?
Oh, they could go anywhere. If they were taken, they could, they'd be waited on and glad to have them. Yeah, there was no discrimination, whatever, in it.
So all the businesses were happy to have their customers?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
While they were here, did you ever get any complaints about pay?
About what?
About their pay, their salary. Did you ever have any complaints about that?
Not that I know of. It was understood they would be paid whatever the going rate was, you know. And that's the way of it. And
did any of these?
They were happy with that, and we were happy with that, I guess, too. I didn't tend to that. My father did, but I knew something about it a little bit. And I was only here in the farming about 4 years before we got this cotton picker. And after we got the cotton picker, we didn't have any more Mexicans. We had to have the cotton for the picker.
While they were here, did any officials from the Mexican government ever come in, like the Mexican consul or anything, to ask questions or to look at the farm?
Well, I couldn't answer that. Not that they probably did, I don't know about that, but it was an above board operation, and so there it was that the farmers needed help, and the Mexicans needed work, and they got together on it. And as I say, it's a government program, and it's very satisfactory.
Did you ever have to pay taxes for their salary, or your father took care of that?
I couldn't answer that now. We paid the head man on it, and that was it. And as far as I know. When these Memphis, well, I do know that. We paid their boss man. It would be a person who would get him up a load of people to come pick, and that was men and women, but we would pay him, and he'd settle with them. See, they had to pay some transportation, pay him some transportation, I guess, and so forth. But then.
These are the blacks from Memphis or Mexicans that came in, men and women?
Blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we didn't have any Mexican nationals coming from there. These were Mexican nationals. Mm-hmm. If that's the right description, I think it is. Yeah. Absolutely satisfactory.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that you think that the program ended?
Mechanical pickers in here was what was the reason for it. No, wasn't any other reason. And the way of the pick sack was over. The hand picking, in other words.
Mm-hmm. The mechanical picker was really
not
efficient.
Just for Mexicans, but for everybody.
The mechanical picker was really efficient?
What?
Was the mechanical picker really efficient? Did it really pick well?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. It did not get quite as good a grade of cotton as a hand pick, but we had to go on and get it out, you know. When you can pick maybe 20 bales a day with a two-row cotton picker, you know, you can get over the ground pretty fast with it, see. At one time, we had five two-row pickers going. And, we overloaded our gin with the pickers, and we didn't have trailers enough. I had 35 trailers, cotton trailers. They were from 6 to 8 bale trailers. And the gin couldn't get them ginned to keep us with trailers to pick in. See? Well, all right. This was a co-op gin. A bunch of farmers owned it. We overhauled our gin and increased the capacity of it. And took out a loan to finance it. With a maturity date of 10 years. We was paying it off in 10 years. And by the time we got that gin paid off, which was in early 1970, most of the farmers had quit cotton already. And we struggled along with it until 78, and we quit too.
Why did they quit cotton?
Well, it was combination of things. We couldn't make the yield, couldn't control the weeds like we needed to, and so we just expenses out was such that we couldn't make anything out of it. And so, with the advent of Roundup herbicide, you ever hear of that?
Mm-hmm.
And Roundup Ready cotton. And better varieties. Better yielding varieties. They don't chop it at all. They spray it. They plant it. And either hill drop it or just plant enough seed to be a stand as it's cold, you know, and not be too thick. And that's the way it doesn't need to be chopped with, to thin it. And so then gather it and make 2 or 2.5 bales an acre, or maybe 3. Maybe they can come out with some income.
Was your father a farmer all of his life?
All his life. Most all his life.
Did he too grow up in Arkansas?
He grew up in and around Heber Springs. Mm-hmm.
He was born there? He was born there? In
Heber
Springs?
Yes, he was born there. He had a freight haul job for a time when I was a kid, when I first born. He had a wagon and team, horses, and he hauled groceries for his store in Heber Springs from Searcy, Arkansas. And there's a lot of steep hills in that deal. That was something. But he did it. But that didn't last long. We we moved out on the farm earlier. I mean, maybe I might have been 4 or 5 years old when I moved out there, but I remember all that growing up, and I was 11 or 12 years old when we moved here.
Was your mother also born in the same town in Arkansas?
She was born in her folks lived in Quitman, Arkansas. I think she was born in Pearson, which is a little bit east of Quitman. Her name was, she was a Baldridge. Now her daddy was a farmer at first, and then he got a store, and was a storekeeper, and they lived in town. But her daddy, there were four of them in her family. 3 girls and a boy. And the youngest one of the girls lived to be just a little short of 100. My mother was 79 when she died, Aunt Olga wasn't that old. She was maybe 69 or 70. Good country people.
Hold on 1 second. Okay. The following questions are going to be asked by Simon.
Mr. Beasley, did you have your own commissary?
Well, we did not actually have a commissary.
So where would your labor go? Where would they go into Hughes?
They'd go into Hughes. Or to a little country store that was located in Greasy Corner, which is about halfway to Hughes.
Who ran that store?
A Chinaman.
And what was the name? Where is that store? Where was it?
Greasy Corner.
Greasy Corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that was run by a Chinaman.
Yeah. He had a Chinaman there. He had a store there a long time. His name was Cam Jew. And I'd like to tell you a little about him. In 1930, we had a drought, maybe it's properly said, and our garden burned up. Didn't have anything to eat. And so Cam Jew said to my dad, said, "Mr. Beasley, if you or your folks need to buy something, need something, some kind of furnish, come to me and I'll fix you up, and you can pay me when you can." And it was in the Depression had struck, and Cam Jew, the Chinaman, had saved back enough to where he could ride through it, and so he did. But a lot of the stores in Hughes had to close. They could not give credit.
Did any of your migrant workers, the Mexicans, did they end up staying in this area? Did they come back regularly to you? I know they had a boss that they reported, but did any of your
they had some sort of a boss for the crew.
Right, but did they end up living in around this area?
Oh yes.
So there are still some around.
Oh, well, no. The ones that we had, they were just here for the two and a half months that they were contracted for, or maybe three. And they went on back, but they had some sort of a bus for transportation. And there was about 40 of them, I think.
Well, my last question is, program ended so many years ago, what do you think about the program? Was it satisfactory to you in general?
Well, so far as I know, it was very satisfactory and necessary.
Well, thank you very much.
You know Vicky Carr?
No, but I've heard of her. I don't know her personally.
She's my favorite singer. You know Maggie Rodriguez?
Maggie Rodriguez? A singer? Maggie Rodriguez? Who is Maggie Rodriguez? Because I know Maggie Rodriguez.
Well, she's on the CBS Early Show.
Oh, yes, I do. That Maggie Rodriguez, I've seen her.
She's from Miami. And she's about as Mexican as they get, I guess, and good looking.